Sophistication. Class. Restraint. Dignity. None of these words have anything to do with Super Troopers 3.
1, 2, 3, go!
Barbara in the house!
Hope you guys aren't too drunk already!
Now in theaters.
No new info on the guy who did it.
Oh, so it couldn't have been a woman?
Sexist!
You ever see Ocean's 8?
Enough! Super Troopers 3, meow. Playing only in theaters. Rated R. Under 17, not admitted without parents.
Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways, exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This summer, whatever you're watching, baseball, golf, soccer, racing, DraftKings has you covered for every single moment of it. The DraftKings Sports app is now available in all 50 states, bringing the game straight to your fingertips wherever you are. New DraftKings customers, sign up with code KSR. Spend $5 to get 150 in rewards within 14 days. Includes all markets. That's code KSR. In partnership with DraftKings, the crown is yours. Bet with DK Sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 1-800-MY-RESET. Connecticut? Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino in Kansas, bet tax pass-through may apply in Illinois. 21 plus, void in Canada. Event contract trading with DraftKings predictions involves risk of loss. Availability varies. Predictions offer void in New York. Bet to get bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Trade to get prediction dollars that expire in 1 year. $50 in rewards issued every 7 days via click to claim for 14 days. One non-withdrawable reward redeemable. Terms at dkng.co/offer. Limited time offer.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Green.
We're talking about the Nancy Guthrie ransom letters today from a psychological perspective. Now that they've been released in their entirety by the Sheriff's Department, lots of people looking at these have heard lots of different opinions onto what they are, how they were developed, what they mean, reading between the lines. And at the end of the day, it's all conjecture. But let's put our conjecture behind it. Let's put on our thinking hats, if you will, and dig deep into what is going on with the two Nancy Guthrie ransom letters that it seems the authorities believe may have some semblance of legitimacy to them, or at least they believe they came from the same people, these two letters. Not necessarily for sure the people who took Nancy Guthrie, but two in a row from the same people. Does it matter? We're going to read both of the letters on the show today, and then we're going to start going into it. The Sheriff's Department finally put both the notes out in full, and the reason they gave was psychological. They're not asking the public for a location. They're asking the public to recognize a man by how he writes. Siobhan Scott is a psychotherapist with 30 years in trauma and forensic work and the author of The Mind of Mass Killers, and she's with us every single Wednesday. We always appreciate that. We're going to go through both of these line by line exactly as it was released. And then I'm going to throw it to you, Siobhan, to get your initial reaction to it. So let's begin here. This is the first letter. It says, "Hello, Savannah. We have your mother, Nancy. She is safe but scared. She will be held for ransom. And once payment is received, she will be released unharmed. We'll be holding her for a maximum of 7 days. You will need to send Bitcoin in the amount of $4 million USD before 5 p.m. on Thursday the 5th. If payment is not received, the ransom will be increased to $6 million USD, which will need to be paid by 5 p.m. on Monday the 9th. Once payment is received to the Bitcoin address below, she will be released within 12 hours of deposit to a safe drop-off location back in Tucson. If payment is not received by the last deadline on Monday the 9th at 5 p.m., she will be killed. Your mother is aware of this and her life is in your hands. It is in the best interest of everyone to have this completed as soon as possible. You will not be able to contact me from here on out. There will be no negotiation. Do not play games. Law enforcement will not be able to help you. She had a smartwatch on the floor of the front of her bed, and the white floodlight in the backyard was destroyed. That's how it signs off. That is note number one. That's what everybody has been dissecting. Siobhan, I'm going to throw it to you first. What's your overall take on this whole thing? Then we'll break it down further.
Well, I confess that when I read these notes, I was surprised. They strike me as procedural, you know, very, very clear. There's not really any emotion coming through. It could have been an HR memo, you know, that's just how it came off. It's like, here are my main points. No ranting, no rage, no anger, some things that you might typically see. But any kind of writing leaves a footprint. You know, you learn a lot about a person. So this struck me as an educated person, somebody who may write emails in their job, you know, that are sort of managerial. We don't know what kind of job, but somebody who's very comfortable with language and a good vocabulary, good punctuation. So somebody very comfortable with, you know, sending kind of these very procedural emails out. That was my initial thought.
Does that mean it's someone who maybe has done this before in terms of sending ransom demands out, or maybe someone who, you know, is sending out notes to shift workers on the line? I mean, what? How do you read into that?
Yeah, I can't say that there's anything that makes me think that they've done ransom notes before. Of course, that's possible. We're just speculating. But somebody that I think works in a capacity where they're firing off emails. You know, these are the procedures we follow. And I mean, it could be a paralegal. It could be somebody who works in HR. It could be somebody who's got a management position in some kind of company. But it struck me as somebody who's very comfortable with language and comfortable with procedures. I did run the notes through AI detectors just to see. I got no, you know.
I was just going to do that literally. I'm copying and pasting on this monitor over here because I was going to ask Grok, and I'll do it as we continue to go here. Robin, your thoughts?
Yeah, I did it too, and I've done multiple passes on this with AI, without AI, and the lack of consistency for pronouns, tenses, it shows most likely it is human derived, not AI derived. But there's a possibility, and this is what AI came up with, is possibility that, like many of us do now, is that you make an AI request and then you edit what you get. Yes. So there's definitely a human touch on this. What it is lacking, though, is it's lacking what you typically see in a letter for ransom. That does not fit that pattern whatsoever. And Siobhan, you made a great point there, and that is fired off. Yes, because it definitely does not look like this was the primary intent as the letter. The letter was not the primary intent because it's kind of all over the place. For a short letter, for a ransom note, it was not, does not come off cross because of the inconsistencies with the language, the procedural aspect of it. It like you said, it gives you that feeling like it was, you know, like, oh my gosh, I got to get this letter out, so I'll just send it now. Boom. Not a lot of time spent really making sure you're going to do it, because it definitely has the main intent was finance. Get something out of this house that wasn't gotten when they left.
Yeah. And the fact it was addressed to Savannah is significant. Did they look at her as the primary person with the money? Was it, as we've speculated before, was this motivated by some kind of personal grudge against her? That's not really clear. There's no real anger directed at her, but there's the interesting thing, you hold her life in your hands. Okay, so there's the deflection of responsibility. Right. No, clearly you're holding her life in your hands. It's not Savannah doing it.
And I definitely saw that too. It's not just only what's there, but it's what not there, because I know a lot of people were theorizing that this was grudge, it was resentment. I didn't pick up any of that language whatsoever, especially then we haven't gotten to when we get to the second note there. This is not a letter of resentment. This was purely for financial gain. I didn't see anything else in it.
Transactional.
Transactional, yep.
You do this and we'll do that. And here's our bullet points about what we want done. Yeah.
What do you make of the USD in there? After every time they talk about dollar amounts, it's USD. I mean, are they really thinking there's going to be some sort of confusion? They're like, oh, I thought you meant pesos. We sent the wrong type of currency. Is that just regular vernacular that you'd hear more along the border, where there may be some questions sometimes about what sort of currency you're paying in, depending on what side of the line you're on?
That's an interesting thought. Certainly could be, but it also could be, again, somebody that's just practiced at writing really clear procedure, transactional kinds of notes. This is what I want done, and here's specifically what I want done. Mm-hmm. So, that's a hard one.
And I'm with you on that one. I'm a maybe on that one because every time we see something, I always reverse it. What would I do in these situations? And I, as a solopreneur, I put U.S. dollars, USD behind some transactions as well.
Sure.
If I'm dealing with groups and organizations that might have more of an international feel to it, I'll make sure. So yeah, it could be cross border. But I think, and I looked this up as well, when you're dealing with crypto, what I found also missing from this was time zone. So crypto acts on UTC time, and they didn't give. So when they said by 5 o'clock you need this, 6 o'clock this, what time zone? And so they made an assumption that it was actually standard time for where they were at in Arizona, and so that gave me the inclination most likely local and lack of sophistication. So they had a U.S. dollar as if an international sophistication to it, but they assumed that they knew what time zone it would be in, which, again, when you look up crypto acts on UTC time, you know, Greenwich Mean Time, basically, and not on local standard time anywhere in the States.
Great point.
Why limit yourself to a week? Why 7 days or we're going to kill her? Is it just, well, we got to move on to the next one and keep the cattle call rolling of who we're kidnapping? Or I don't know. I found that interesting, too, because I'm thinking if you have somebody and somebody wants them back and there's some sort of possibility that they will pay you, why are you setting a deadline for this? Or is that something that maybe would have been extended had she not allegedly died, according to the second letter? We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, that strikes me, again, as procedural, you know, management. It's like you tend to say, I want this done, and here's the timeline that it needs to be done by. And yeah, that doesn't mean that they can't change their strategy or change, you know, be more flexible on it. Mm-hmm. But it sort of struck me that, you know, when I've written demand letters, I haven't written any of these kind of demand letters.
But when you've kidnapped people, Siobhan.
Yeah. But when I've written something, you know, I had to sue a contractor once who just was not following through. I don't think I actually sued them, but I threatened to sue them. And I gave a time zone. Mm-hmm. If I don't hear from you by, this is what I'm going to do. And so it could just be, you know, you're trying to be clear and precise and you want to see results and you don't want it dragged out, because perhaps the longer it's dragged out, the greater the odds that you're going to get caught.
She is safe, but scared. That's an interesting one. What is your take on that? She is safe, but scared. Telling her daughter he'll kill her, and he stops to say the woman is frightened. That line really isn't doing anything for him. It doesn't speed up the money, and it doesn't add pressure. I mean, is he calming Savannah down? Like, is she's okay? Or is that a reflection on himself or herself or whoever's doing this?
It did strike me as when you have a tremendous attunement with your loved one, you don't want to think of them as scared. And mm-hmm. so I think there is, it does add a layer of emotional pressure and intensity. She's suffering. She's not having a good time. She's frightened. And with all her health problems, you know, Savannah was well aware of, apparently these people were aware to some degree that she had health problems, and look at her age. The fact that she's under this kind of pressure and is scared, I think that would push me to really act quickly. You don't want your loved ones scared.
Yeah, definitely psychological pressure, lever of influence there. I'll tell you that those first three sentences are, I keep going back to it, she will be held for ransom. That, you know, will be held, you know.
Isn't she currently being held for ransom?
Yeah, I know. The language in there, it goes back to what Siobhan was saying. It was just fired off, not a lot of thought. You know, so both my first impressions, then you throw it through the Grok analyzer, it comes across and is written as a plan B. This was not plan A. Plan A was go in the house, get something of value, and cash out. Something goes sideways. And the language in the letter, again, it's never anything's 100% of anything unless you ask the person, they tell you. But all the language indicators in this are saying this was plan B. The way it was written, the way it's delivered, definitely first rodeo when it comes to doing ransom, because this is not how any ransoms are ever given for people that actually the primary intent was to get money by taking a human being and holding them until I get money. Because again, that's boom, 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 boom. It stays transactional. It stays quick. It makes it easy. This is what you do. It's very authoritative. In, out, sign of life, proof of life, out. None of that is here on this one. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The very end of it, letter one, where she had a white smartwatch on the floor at the foot of the bed, and the white floodlight in the backyard was destroyed. That line there. Obviously, that's someone who knows that they're going to be looking for some sort of proof that this is legit, that this is someone who was actually there and not just somebody making a ransom demand. They're aware that that's going to be in the consideration. And they thought that that was going to be enough of the carrot on the stick to be taken seriously. I guess, why wasn't it taken seriously? Or should it have been taken seriously? Or is it just a big nothing burger? Robin, I know you early on, and I think I have too, have said, well, I mean, you could make some random guesses at this just with a little bit of research. But I don't know. I mean, Siobhan, what's your thought on that end of it first?
That was really what tipped the scale for me into, you know, my idea that this was legitimate, because I think particularly the watch on the floor, it's like, that's not something you could just make a guess about and hit it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm tipping it towards, I think this person either was the one in the house or has knowledge of the person, you know, secondhand coming from in the house because of that. What was interesting, because I'm really focusing, words kind of jump out when they kind of strike me. The word destroyed was interesting. The floodlight in backyard was destroyed. So the first thing that enters my mind, all right, what destroyed that? Was it a stick? Was it a hand? Is there DNA on it? Is there shards? I mean, so the word destroyed, it wasn't broken, disabled, removed. You know, there's a lot of other adjectives you could use, but the word destroyed really jumped out at me, because destruction says that something happened to it intentionally. I want to discover what that was, because there might be also evidence there. But that's why I'm leaning towards these were most likely legit. I think law enforcement was and still is reticent to say they're legit from the sense of legit ransom notes, because again, for all the reasons I'm saying, and Siobhan is too, it doesn't ring true of a ransom as primary objective. And I know there's others, including, you know, Jen, that says this was the primary objective. Okay, I live in the world of maybe on all this is all open, but I'm just saying the language here, and this is why the behavioral team was reacting as if they were real. That's why they, from our conjecture, was working with Savannah to, you know, put out responses to these. So I think it's a strange mix on here. I think the person has either first or secondhand knowledge of the things in the house, because there's a connection, but I do not think it was the primary of the person that wrote this was the ransom.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of ways. I mean, we got to think of this, too. It's not just as black and white of, well, the person that wrote this clearly did it because they had knowledge of where that there was a floodlight out and that the Apple Watch was on the ground. There's a lot of people who would have had knowledge of that. And a lot of people who I'm sure would have told people about that because it wasn't necessarily like secret held back information at that moment in time. You had a lot of investigators combing that property. They were out. I mean, there was so much so that we had, 14 rubber gloves strewn around the property. And they're like, whoops, that was the FBI or somebody dropping them on the ground on an active crime scene. So you had that level of sloppiness going on. I would also guess that if you have that level of sloppiness of just, whoops, the gloves are falling all around here. Now we're thinking it might be the killers, might have the same sloppiness with words, might have the same sloppiness with information. Initially in this case, I don't think it's that far of a cry that somebody would have said, yeah, and that floodlight was destroyed and they found her watch on the ground and somebody heard that and somebody thought, I might try and make a demand letter making them think it's Nancy Guthrie. Let's see if it goes to the crypto wallet. Some sick idiot that doesn't realize they could be caught for doing such a thing. I don't know. Is that too many degrees of separation for that to be a potential reality in a case like this? I'm going to go to Robin on that one first from an investigative standpoint.
It adds a level of complexity. And every time you add one more level of complexity, I think it diminishes probability.
Yeah.
Because it's always easier than that. But that's why I use the same phraseology. Whoever wrote this had either first or secondhand knowledge from somewhere of a few details that I found a little too random to be just thrown out there like an AI-generated kind of randomness. I mean, I would have picked something else. I would have picked what she was wearing to bed or something like that. Or I wouldn't have put the Apple Watch actually on the ground. So I tend to think that's actually probably legit. Observation by someone passing along to someone else, just who those people are, is the interesting thing. And also just looking at the timeline, last seen, so first ransom note was one day after she was reported missing, about 2 days after she was last seen. So there's plenty of time in there. It is within the window, on the outside edge of the window of ransom notes typically being received if they are legit, definitely enough time for word of mouth from different individuals. I haven't looked at who had actually access to that house that could have done that before then. Hopefully law enforcement has looked at that, but with nanos, you never know.
What are your thoughts, Siobhan?
Layer of complexity upon layer of complexity, and it's sure possible that somebody spilled that information. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a hard one to call.
Let's get your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube, everybody, on ransom note number one. Why don't you go ahead and weigh in there? We, of course, read the comments, and we'll continue our conversation there. The links are in the description. Let's move over to ransom letter number two. 4 days later, a second note landed in the same Tucson newsroom about Nancy Guthrie. The final deadline hadn't passed. $6 million was on the table, and whoever wrote this walked away from every dollar of it. Here's the second note in full, exactly as the sheriff's department released it. It says, Guthrie family, we did not fully grasp the seriousness of her physical condition. We never intended to hurt her. That was not our intention. She perished shortly after she was taken. We believe it was heart-related. She is buried in nature now. Nothing you could have done could have changed the outcome. We want your family to know this and hope you all can find peace. We are truly sorry. It reads nothing like the first very mechanical, very institution-based letter. It's almost like someone else wrote this. The only reason it's connected is because it apparently came from the same IP address that the first one came from. So the odds of that happening are slim to nil. They came from the same place. Written by the same person? I guess that's the question. What's your take on letter number two, Siobhan?
It really fascinated me because it's almost got a literary quality to it. And the use of two words jumped out at me because they're not words that I think in normal conversation we would use. She perished.
Mm-hmm.
she perished. You know, most people would say she died. If you want to soften that one a little bit, she passed away. But the grasp and the perished, that made me think this is somebody who's a reader, you know? They're the kind of words that a writer, somebody who's looking at a more creative use of language would use. So that jumped out at me. That was interesting. The other thing that became, I think, predominant in this second one was the need to present themselves as a moral person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not a bad person. And then moving near the end, with almost an attempt, she's in nature. You know, this is an attempt to soothe the family and comfort them.
Yeah.
And that was rather extraordinary. So surprised me.
It's like families of bunnies hopping around her grave and there's daisies growing. Yeah. It's like, what are we like? I'm like, I'm expecting that sort of music to be playing in the background. I mean, so they literally go from, we want 4 million. If we don't get it by then, it's going to be 6. And if she's not, she's dead. And now we didn't really mean any of it. We didn't mean to hurt her. Like, oh gosh. I got more questions. Robin, your take on letter two.
Yeah, so definitely in line with it, Siobhan and many others said too, the second letter is preempting just in case they're caught. They want to show that she didn't die by their hands. They're doing the best they can to push the blame off on they didn't know, they're sorry, mea culpa. And that happens quite frequently in cases where there is an accidental death, but at the hands of someone that really shouldn't have been there. But this is the real big letter to me that says that ransom was not the primary objective, because it also rings true to this is a panic escalation, that if they truly wanted the money, why not wait till the deadline to see if it's delivered? They didn't wait till that second deadline. When she passed away in their hands, the first thing they did was not go for the money. They went to say, uh-oh, I got to make it so just in case I am caught, I can say I wasn't about the money. Mm-hmm. So again, the home invasion for the intent of getting something in value in the house was, to me, it was an object that they're going for. When they couldn't get what they're going for because they had bad information, couldn't find it, whatever it was, and they encountered her, panic escalation, take her, plan B. Note one rings as plan B. We've got to get at something out of this. Note two says, I want nothing to do with this anymore. Because the entire thing fell apart. I got to distance myself, run away, hide, and put a mea culpa out there and never speak of this again. That's what this says to me. Mm-hmm. That's why I still think that the whole ransom for extortion was plan B of what they wanted to do. That's how these read. So that's if, again, we'll go back to the world of maybe and if this was written by the person that actually abducted her, or if it's secondhand information, it's someone who's having fun playing with law enforcement. Although I don't see that language in there, but you leave all possibilities open.
Why even send the second note, Siobhan? I mean, exactly that. I mean, why not just wait to see if you get your money in your Bitcoin account? Why even stop? I mean, they were ready to pay. We've seen, and Coffin Daffer just did an interesting piece on that. She actually has seen the account and she's posted about it, the Bitcoin account, because it was accidentally posted by someone in authority. Whoops, we put the wrong thing up. Yeah, exactly. Go figure. Nanos did something that he shouldn't have. Nah, not the Nanos I know. So that gets posted. So it looks like the family was ready to pay. They were communicating. We are ready to pay in the string to the Bitcoin. Why even do the second note? It feels like they felt like, in my conjecture, a moral obligation or something going on here with that language. The language almost struck me as biblical to a certain extent. Perish, shall not perish, but have eternal life. Mm-hmm. Things of that nature, lines like that. And if you are someone who's practicing a religion of some sort or whatever, you know, there's a lot of mental gymnastics that are likely going on there to somehow, in your mind, feel morally okay with what you've did, and you're using language like this. Something sometimes people do to justify their shitty behavior. We'll get into that with Koberger in a moment. But that's what struck me about it. Why send the second note unless you're just doing it for your own guilty conscience. And maybe that's the answer.
I think that's a really good guess. The other piece, I think, as you said earlier, is that it's kind of a preemptive, oh my God, when we get caught, what is our way out of it? You know, that we never intended this to happen. They use the word intent. This was not our intent. We never intended this to happen. And so, you know, that says to me also that they're trying to make the case. I'm really not, you know, I have no malevolence here. Even though we said in the first note, she will be killed. But, you know, they're trying to cover this base that, but we really didn't mean to kill her. And the other thing is they may have felt like by following through with the Bitcoin that it, and the longer that this went on, the greater the odds that they would be caught.
Yeah. I'm wondering if they're sitting there like thinking it's imminent. They're going to find us. Yeah. So we better have something on the record of what we're doing and why we're doing it. And I also wonder how much of a response that was to as well to the threat that was made at that moment in time. While the Guthries are making videos trying to inspire people to do the right thing, Trump came out and was like, we're going to fucking kill you. You know, like that, I wonder like if that almost scared the person a little bit too of like, oh, it was an accident. You know, I wonder, you know, Robin.
Yeah, we never intended to hurt her. The whole language is saying this is plan B. It wasn't our intent to do any of this. And for them, again, we're all on the same sheet. Fear outweighed greed. And they, because the greatest motivator of human behavior is fear. And they feared for getting caught, especially because, again, I'm going to go back down this Bitcoin area. You know, when you look at Porch Guy, again, at the very beginning, it's like, does this guy on the porch, I don't know how to use, I don't know a thing about Bitcoin. And I think I got maybe a half the degree of sophistication more than the guy in the front porch does. Does that guy look like a Bitcoin guy? And going from the singular to the plural, of the pronouns in the first letter says it's leaning more towards like one or two people tops involved in this, some guy on the front porch. I think that part of that fear of being caught was they didn't know the first thing about how to use Bitcoin and not get caught using Bitcoin. Because otherwise, why not wait until the second deadline? And the final word there, we are truly sorry. What ransomer in the history of mankind has ever said they're truly sorry that they kidnapped someone for ransom? No, that's the whole point. If you actually were intent on kidnapping Nancy for a ransom, you wouldn't be sorry. You'd be sorry you didn't get your money, but they're sorry she died.
So what sort of tells would be going on with this person or persons right now out there in the world if they're amongst their friends, amongst their family, in the environment in which they live? Is this something where there might be something off about some of these people? Because if we're to believe that it's not just lip service, that they're not just saying we're truly sorry as a way to somehow gain some sort of leverage for if they get caught, when they get caught, if there is truly a regret going on here, might that be seeping through in other elements of their life, Siobhan?
That's a really good question. You know, it's hard to answer because we don't know enough about who this person is. My guess is they're not talking about it, and they're trying to compartmentalize it, and you know, going with this story of I'm really not a bad person. They're externalizing responsibility. It's really not my fault that she died. She had a heart condition. I would think they're having a lot of anxiety, but is that showing up to other people in their lives? Maybe, maybe not.
Yeah, definitely on all those. I see someone, according to the writing, this is someone with a lot of empathy. They're not psychopathic, at least on that spectrum to that degree, enough to take someone, though, obviously. So there would be leakage from at least from the language there. And so when you have leakage, you're going to have tells, you know, to your question. And so either they're really good at masking them, which I don't believe so. Human beings are really poor at masking it along your baseline. So I would think if I was this individual and no one has turned me in and given tips yet, either your circle of confidants is nothing or one that did it with you, or you ran from your baseline. In other words, they got out of Dodge, set up a whole new life and said, I'm not ever talking about this again. So when they go to a new location, the new baseline's established as who they are from that moment forward, because there would, in my estimation, there would be leakage from who they were and how they felt before the event to how they were after the event. And that would give the you know, people to give tips on if anyone was in a position to want to do that in their circle, or they just are so tight family, tight cloistered group that says we're never turning each other in. This is a horrible mistake. And we'll never speak of it again. So it's either really, really that tight or they ran.
What does it tell us about where the investigation is at right now? The fact that they finally have released these letters after 6 months in their entirety. Siobhan?
My guess is they're feeling stuck. And, you know, is this something, I mean, that's how they caught the Unabomber, right? Yep. But he had a really eccentric style of communication. And his brother was the one that came forward. So are they hoping that somebody is going to recognize something in this? There's not anything. I mean, it's there are these bits and pieces that are eccentric, but it's hard for me to imagine that this is distinctive enough for a relative or somebody else to come forward and recognize it.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's hard to see anything you could grab on this, because literally that first one, I write like this. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, and then when the empathy side, I mean, you guys get the emails and stuff from me. I'm very mm-hmm. emotional. I'm very empathetic. Yeah. The only thing that's lacking that I don't have is I use a lot of emoticons. I'm surprised they didn't have it in a little teary one on there, right? But yeah, I didn't see a lot in there, except the only thing you might be able to get if you are someone associated, if someone uses the word destroyed, when something goes sideways in a house, that might be a trigger. Because again, words, people get idiosyncratic with the words they use, and there's not a lot to go on there, but the word destroyed when dealing with something, that's not like when something breaks around the house, I've never used the word destroyed. So maybe this is an idiosyncratic word for someone mm-hmm. that might be a trigger. So there's mm-hmm. going to be tiny, tiny little one or two words in there. And what it would take is someone in that close enough circle to hear them describe things that one or two of those words in there were idiosyncratic to the person they're matching. And then it's going to take that one person that's curious enough to say, huh, could it be? And then that next step of just calling in a tip. But there's a possibility.
I don't know the answer to this, but was her light actually destroyed? I think we know it was burned out.
Right.
But we're not working. But is destroyed the operative word that should have been used? I think that I kind of wonder about, too. How many shitty managers at, like, the Sizzler or Arby's do you think are being turned in right now with employees going, oh, they wrote that. They always write these horrible emails late at night. We're out of the Arby's sauce. The horsey sauce needs refilling. And if we don't refill it by Tuesday at 7, you're out of a job. And then they send the apology letter the next morning for the very harsh letter. I truly is not what I meant. I had a couple cocktails, and I'm sorry I was really harsh about the horsey sauce. You know, how many people are doing that right now going, this seems just like my manager? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I don't know the answer to that, but I'd imagine there's several people being pointed at right now that probably I have nothing to do with this case. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue to work our way through examining this case and wherever it ends up taking us. Let's move over to another case that we have been talking about, and another case that has some interesting writings coming out of it this week. Brian Koberger thread said three words, you remember, last year at sentencing. I respectfully decline. Before that, the only words anyone heard from him in the courtroom were yes, no, and guilty. He has been silent for 3.5 years. And then from a segregated cell at the Idaho Maximum Security Penitentiary, he sent a statement to the New York Times through his family. We're going to read that statement here today. There's also the actual filing that he wrote in his serial killer handwriting. That's another piece of writing. It's very similar in nature, but we're going to go through the one that was actually sent through the Times to the Times directly from the Times. Going to read directly from the text that Brian Enten had posted. Your thoughts in the comment section as we work our way through this. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author of The Minds of Mass Killers, is with us, as is Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent and chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Okay, here we go. The words of Koberger. I feel like I should do this on the phone.
Got a little prop here.
Because it just seems like over a year later.
He's on the bat phone.
It is self-evident. I'm just going to read it normally. Over a year later, it is self-evident, because Koberger likes to speak in big words as if he's, you know, oratoring something very important. It is self-evident that in State v. Koberger, justice was not served. Unanswered questions seem to multiply with each piece of discovery unleashed, and the public demands the truth. It's almost kind of like a movie trailer. Unfortunately, the truth shall never be derived from the state's myopic narrative, a work of fiction which has yet to evolve since the PCA was released nearly 4 years ago, and its faulty premises were never challenged at trial. Circumnavigated by a broken plea, the trial never provided the public the clarity conductive to closure, and justice shall remain abjectly miscarried unless that plea is withdrawn. Withdrawn, I tell you. I added that part. I hereby declare my intention to enter a not guilty plea and welcome the state the opportunity to prove their case at trial, as well as to again file for the death penalty. My actual innocence is my truth. And the plea, hinged on by false promises and blatant disinformation, must be withdrawn. Thank you for all who believe in my innocence and continue to critically analyze the case. I send my love to my family, who have never wavered in their belief in who I am, their belief in my innocence. Thank you. Thank you.
Bravo.
Henry Siobhan, what the hell was that?
This is the hour of our
Yeah. As I've said before, this use of language is how he got into a PhD program, right? Because they like to see applications where people write like that. It's BS thick. It's really, it's painful to listen to. On one hand, very comedic, and on another hand, it's like, oh my God, the narcissism here, and the cluelessness that, you know, people are going to believe this at this point. Although apparently there are some people who want to believe it. Just glaring, putting the spotlight back on himself. Mm-hmm. The impression management of what a great person he is and how unfair this whole thing has been, because of course he's innocent. Not really, but you know, mm-hmm. that's what he wants to communicate. And he has too much time on his hands. You know, this is what he sits around thinking about, is how can I craft this perfect, you know,
here. Clarice, I see in the comment, Clarice. Yeah. Robin, your thoughts on little Bry's ramblings?
I feel so inhuman every time I take pleasure in him suffering, and every time I read something from him suffering, I just like rejoice. I did a deeper search on it too to see what language, because he's a copycat. He's not an original thinker in absolutely anything. And this entire thing, the title of it and a lot of the language from it is derived from the book Broken Plea, because he is nothing in life but a copycat, subhuman being, again, you know, abhorrent genetic bucket of goo, as we've said.
Ding, ding, ding.
And as Gonsalves is continually say as well, because everything he says in there was cut and pasted from something else, all to support his own personal narrative of how he's suffering behind bars. And someone wrote a book that was hearsay because he got it from someone else, didn't do due diligence on anything, and Koberger ordered it from, because it's got to come directly from the publisher, or someone sent it to him, one of his neocons that's like on his side, sent him a copy. He's like, here's my ticket to freedom, and I'm going to cut and paste and claim this as my laurels as to why I got to do this. So you can't even analyze it, because to me, it's just it's a cut and paste conglomeration of stupid goo.
Mm-hmm. Is this... you know, you've obviously, Siobhan, you've analyzed a lot of people in the book, The Mind of Mass Killers. This is what it is, everybody. If you're looking for it on Amazon, highly suggest checking it out. Is this something you think we're going to continue to see out of him every time somebody writes a book that's questioning the case for clicks, basically, or for readers? Because there's going to be more books that are going to come out that are going to go down the conspiracy route. And I'm going to guess everyone he's going to try and latch onto. Is this just the first of many ramblings that we're going to hear out of this guy until somebody finds a broomstick and does what the state of Idaho failed to do?
I think that's a really good guess, because yep. he doesn't have anything else to do other than try and externalize all responsibility and paint himself as a victim. Yeah. And that's going to be, he's trying to take control of the narrative. This is his story now. Mm-hmm. And that's what he's going to stick with. And he'll probably, you know, spend the rest of his life trying to do that.
What's your take on, he's arguing in the more formal document that he wrote to the courts, that his confession was coerced, basically. He was pressured into it, essentially, because Ann Taylor told him how icky death row could be, and how nasty and spooky and scary and bad it could be. And now he's like, oh, maybe it's not that bad. I think she would kind of maybe overplay that a little bit too negatively. Also saying my family was there. My family was part of that decision as well. And now it appears he kind of regrets that they were part of that decision, that he listened to Ann Taylor while at the same time thanking them for being supporters of him the whole way through. I mean, it's almost like contradictory in some ways with the family involvement. What was your read on that?
Yeah, it also made me think how much of this is trying to please his family.
Yeah.
He is probably desperate for emotional support because he knows 99% of the world hates him. And that may be hard for him to live with. And if his family is truly standing by him and saying that they believe he's innocent at this point, is he performing for them as well as these, we'll just say, crazy supporters who are very eager to believe that this is all a conspiracy. And I think also for people like that, it makes them feel important, you know, that they're on his team and this whole thing has been unjust. And that's a really weird mind that goes there, but there are a lot of people with weird minds.
You know, Siobhan, my question is, he didn't have a lot of time, thankfully, to move into the world from mass killer to serial killer, although I think all the workings were there for it. And part of that serial killer mindset with most of them is a fantasization part of it, the fantasy part of it. And I'm curious, do you think that him saying this wasn't the Rose Garden I was promised behind bars, you know, because he thought himself to be, I mean, you can imagine him saying and buying into, I'll plead because, oh, I can be an object of study. I can work with Ramsland and then she can study me and make papers about me. And I can still pursue my academic credentials behind bars. You can see this fantasy going on in his mind because he's got nothing else. Is that what do you think might be going on, the fantasy world, or is it something else?
I think that's a really good guess because, yes, serial killers are driven by fantasy. And I agree that this was the path he was going to take. If he had not been caught, he would have done it again. And fantasy is a huge part of how he copes with the world, you know, being a person with really so little going for him. That this is very important to him now.
And he's got no other currency available to him. He's got nothing. It was all exposed right there in court at the sentencing. four lives tragically lost, and for all these other sick MFers out there, they always had more to work with because they knew they did more. But him just being an abhorrent bucket of goo, he's got nothing else, and so he's got to grab on to anything he possibly can in that fantasy world. And so I think anytime the world gives him any kind of platform, it's horrendous, but at the same time, I think it makes him suffer more because he's never going to get his way.
He didn't mention the victims at all in the letter. I mean, if you truly did not do this, and you're wanting to find justice, you'd think maybe you'd bring them up of like, I want justice for them too. It'd be even more insulting and infuriating if you were to say that. But if that's truly where your heart is at, you might throw that into the letter. What do you think about some of the people who were mentioned in it, and where their head might be at, and what their reaction, pure conjecture, might be after getting the text? I'm sure, you know, on a Tuesday, like, hey, look what your little boy did. Like, oh my God. I wonder. I mean, it's one thing if you do believe that he's innocent, and I get it. Some families are going to be there no matter what. They could have a video of him doing it, and some people could be like, oh, I don't think that was him. I have no idea what their thought process is. I'm not trying to insert that, and I'm not trying to say they've done anything wrong or are hiding anything whatsoever. They, in many ways, are victims of Lil Bri as well. But what if they're not on his team, if they're not thinking, yeah, he just was railroaded here, what should they be doing at this point? Because he's clearly trying to lasso them back into his orbit publicly, whether they seemingly want to be or not. Is this something, you know, as if you were the therapist for a sister, a father, a mother, somebody in this sort of situation, and their child from behind bars does a stunt like this, and they're trying to go, what the hell do I do now? What do you tell them?
Oh, you know, they're still sending him money, right?
Yeah.
Large amounts of money every week, which that is the first thing I would look at. What turns into rescuing and validating something that's ultimately incredibly sick and distorted? And I'm always a believer that reality is the best course. But people tell themselves the stories they need to fall asleep at night. And mm-hmm. I can see it being very possible that they're not wanting to believe it's true. And so, you know, yes, you want to guide people gently into the truth, but that can sometimes take a while. So that would be my approach.
Yeah, Siobhan, I know we've really analyzed Asa Ellerup on this kind of stuff because of her dealing with Rex and her struggles to come to face reality, and her therapist, who wasn't actually licensed at the time, which is another friggin' amazing story into itself, right? So I know you probably can't answer this, but I'm just curious. I'll ask it anyway. So what would the behaviors of his mother look like if she did accept the truth of what he did?
If she was able to fully accept it, my guess is it would shake her identity, it would shake her world, and that could be a very big collapse for her. And so I can understand that. In one way, as you have said, Robin, you try to put yourself in the position of these people just to have an empathic response and understand. Hard for me to believe that if I had, I mean, my kids are so far from being psychopath narcissists, but if I had a child who did something horrendous, hard for me to see that I would be sending them money and doing anything to try to get them out of, you know, the consequences of what they did. But it would break me. It would break me. I think that would be a very, very hard thing to live with.
From what we've seen on those receipts, it's about $150 a week that Mary Koberger has been sending her son, Brian.
Think about that. Yeah. I don't even go out that much.
Yeah.
I mean,
allegedly, that's what we understand. Yeah.
Know.
So, I mean, it's like, yeah, I mean, so he's getting snack time, as I've called it, you know. And look, I mean, there's certainly plenty of horrendous people behind bars whose family believe full well that they are a horrendous human being who've done horrible things and still support them financially behind bars and put money in the commissary. That's nothing new. That certainly does happen. Not everyone completely cuts that off. I think sometimes people do that for themselves more than they're actually doing it for them out of guilt or whatever might be going on in their mind. What I'm wondering about is, again, this is all pure conjecture here. I'm wondering if Brian's cognitive distortions of reality, which we know are many, if he is distorting this idea that because mom is giving him money for snack time every week, that is somehow supporting his innocence. I don't know. I mean, they probably have conversations and stuff. I have no idea. But I'm wondering if that is the sign and that's what fuels him to think my family is behind me because they're giving me money for Snickers. I don't know. What are your thoughts there?
Sure could be that he you know, misinterprets reality and comes up with his own story. And it's very comforting to have this sense of attachment, you mm-hmm. know, to mom and dad. But my guess is, just based upon what we know at this point, is that they at least are entertaining doubts that he is guilty. And that's, you know, their way of coping with it, as mm-hmm. somebody put in the comments and what you just said, Tony, how parents can handle horrendous guilt is just moving into denial. And I think whenever a parent has a kid who does something criminal or does something terrible, most parents blame themselves. And in this case, yes, I don't think he was abused as a child. I think he was, you know, from everything we know, well-parented. These were mm-hmm. decent people. But something came out wrong in the wiring, which I mm-hmm. think for a lot of these people, they're just wired wrong from the beginning. And this may be their way of coping with it, is, you know, to try and reframe things that, you know, their kids simply could not have done it.
And there's also another way to think of the commissary money, too. Stuff I watch on TikTok is horrendous sometimes, you know, people behind bars. I watch all these things on Netflix, documentaries, plus interviews myself, you know, so let's, for conjecture's sake, say it's $150 a week. The likelihood and probability, given what we've heard his conditions are like with the torment from the other prisoners behind bars, there's a large probability that $150 isn't going for Snickers for him. It's going to keep people away from him.
Well, he's in solitary, though. So, I mean,
Yes-ish, but it's still going to pay off the people around him to keep them silent at night, maybe not from pissing in his food. I mean, in other words, it could be given to him to use as currency for a level of security and safety and peace of mind as well. I'm saying there's a lot of ways that people use commissary in prison system. And it might not just be to serve him, because I can't imagine how much, you know, especially being the freakish eater he is and picky eater, that it can be used for anything you're going to buy in commissary for that. But I could see it being, because I've seen it in many other cases where it's being used to purchase things to give the prisoners around you or send to them to keep them from basically killing him or torturing him unendlessly at night. And so you can imagine, so again, reversing it, as abhorrent as I thought my kid might be, am I going to send him money to keep him at least alive? If he's telling me I'm under threat of violence, I'm under threat of these things behind bars. So again, there's a lot of, there could be that as well, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, the motivation really might not be, it might not be Snickers as the motivation, right? at least in the,
but it is a tool.
Yeah. And not in the sense of it from the candy,
which makes me feel even better. because the way my mind was working on this one, because I remember just watching the Gonsalveses, thinking while they're giving their impact statements about what they're going to be doing to fueling the commissaries of those people around him, all I'm thinking is that his mother's trying to balance the wheel on the other side. Because so if you are unlucky enough to be in prison to begin with because you made some horrendous choices in life and you found yourself in the same cell block with Brian Koberger, at this point in life you're thinking, man, we got a lot of commissary coming in from all angles because this guy's a complete nutter.
I mean, if obviously Koberger, he's getting money from people other than his parents. There's pro-burgers that are sending him money, and a good percentage of that goes back to pay the fines and stuff, I guess.
Yep.
But there is a percentage he does get for commissary. But it means more when it's coming from mom, if you will. Siobhan, if mom simply said, you know what, I'm done. I don't want my name on the record here of giving this money. You really went out of turn here and threw us into this mix again. I'm not giving you more money. What happens to Brian Koberger behind bars mentally when if mom or I don't know if she's supporting him mentally or if this is just the conjecture of Koberger, but let's for a moment say that she is and she cuts it off and everybody familial cuts it off. No dad, no mom, no sisters, nobody. What happens to him mentally?
I think it would be a big blow because he's clearly been relying on that attachment, particularly to mom, as a coping mechanism, you know, to try to regulate his emotions. So he would probably suffer more psychologically. But certainly, I think for the family, that would be a healthy thing to do,
is
disconnect more.
I think we'd see him right into his dog more.
Yeah, probably. So if the family's sitting there and you know, you hear this, you know, from families of people who do horrific things like, you know, this is horrible. I feel horrible. I wish there was more I could do. Here's what you can do, Mary. Stop feeding him.
Yeah.
The state will feed him. He's not going to starve to death. The rest of the world he has so bravely marched into through the valley of the shadow of death, using his, you know, biblical large word, you know, dramatic phrasing. And he shall suffer or he shall perish and have eternal life. Whatever the fuck he's going to do. Stop doing it. Stop feeding him. If you want to truly help, here's your one chance you can. You already birthed the monster. You already did whatever that allowed him to get this far. Let's stop. Let's just say stop at this point. And that can be your good deed for life, that everyone doesn't look back upon you for the rest of your life as simply being the mom of Brian Koberger. How about being the mom who cut off Brian Koberger? Okay. That might be the end legacy that you could live with and others could too.
That's a good one.
Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We look forward to continuing the conversation right there. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you get podcasts as well. We do greatly appreciate it. Siobhan's latest book, Nightbird, available wherever you get books. Also, The Minds of Mass Killers, available wherever you get books. Go check it out. And Robin's latest, It's Not All About Me, right here. I got a library on the desk. You can get it wherever you get books, audiobooks as well. Leave a review on Amazon. Greatly appreciated. All right. Until next time, for Siobhan, for Robin, for Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.